Hey there, before the show starts, I just wanted to mention that I'm raising some money for the Colon Cancer Alliance in honor of my mother, who died of colorectal cancer. You may recall that she was a guest on Random Trek, and I'll have a link to the show that she was on in the show notes. The Colon Cancer Alliance is having a 5K, and I am raising funds and running the 5K. So if you enjoy the podcast and you could spare a couple dollars, please donate to my run fund. The link will be in the show notes. Now enjoy the show. Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My guest tonight is Angelica Jade Bastian. Angelica, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
I am excited because, well, I'm not going to say why I'm excited. Well, I'm excited to have you on just because I'm excited to have you on. But could you tell the people a little bit about yourself?
I am a film and TV critic based in Chicago. I'm a contributing writer for Vulture, and I also write quite a bit for places like New York Times, Rolling Stone, Village Voice. Name a publication I've probably written for.
And I will say I am a big fan of all of those, but especially I enjoy Vulture very much. So get that.
They're a great place.
Yes, I like to get my pop culture from Vulture, which I assume is why it's called Vulture.
Yep.
I just put that together right this second. Amazing. So we're here to talk about Star Trek, which is certainly a pop culture. Now, I know you write a lot about pop culture and culture in general. And there's this idea of, well, like a home fandom, if you will. So would you consider Star Trek your home fandom, or is there something else that would be above it in your heart?
Probably Star Trek has my heart and soul next to my obsession with probably Wonder Woman and The Flash.
Ah.
So those are like my biggest obsessions. Maybe I think probably Star Trek, though. It is a little bit above it, but people don't realize that because I never really get to write about Star Trek.
Because, you know, Wonder Woman and The Flash, things are happening. Star Trek, yeah. Well, Star Trek Discovery, though, is coming out, so.
Yes, it is, which I'm very leery about it, but. Oh. Okay. My suspicions will be proven wrong.
Well, I want to hear about your suspicions. What are your suspicions?
Well, I mean. Some of the conversation from, you know, the producers and writers on the staff is just really curious to me. I also think it takes place in like the worst time period it should take place in. I really do not for a franchise that's usually very forward thinking. Star Trek has become very rote. Like, it's so obsessed with the original series, it can't do anything else. I'm like, what? I want to know what happened after Voyager and Deep Space Nine. Mm-hmm. I don't give a damn about 10 years before the original series. I don't give a damn about hearing more about Klingons. And I love Klingons. I, like, really do. When I'm nervous on a date, I talk about Klingon mating culture. So I do love Klingons. But I think... we've explored them and Vulcans enough. Let's move on to like different alien species, please. Dear God. I don't. Also, this weird conversation about, oh, well, this series isn't going to be about the captain. It's, you know, it's about other people on the crew and it's more of an ensemble. And I'm just like, wait, every Star Trek is an ensemble. And also, do they forget that Deep Space Nine existed?
I feel like a lot of people do forget that Deep Space Nine existed, which I think is a damn shame, as the kids say. The kids don't say that. I have a pet theory about why Star Trek is so kind of backwards looking nowadays. And that is because I think that when you ask most people, you know, name a Star Trek character, they will name either Captain Kirk or Spock. And so they are trying to appeal to the broadest audience by saying, hey, you know, Kirk and Spock. Well, here's a new movie in the J.J. Abrams universe that has a new version of Kirk and Spock. And then, you know, Kirk and Spock. So this new show is set 10 years before the thing, you know, so it's OK.
Yeah, no, I get that. But that's also just kind of weird to me that that's become the most well-known version of Star Trek, considering Next Generation was like so huge and had all those movies. I don't know. I think it's sort of, that's really, really strange to me.
I don't know why it is, but I do think that kind of the holy trinity of Star Trek is Spock, Kirk, and McCoy for whatever reason. And so when you think of people, when you ask people, what do you think of Star Trek? That's what they think of.
Yeah.
I will, and I know, spoiler alert for a question I usually ask, which is, what is your favorite series, Star Trek series? I already know the answer because we talked about this, Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, definitely Deep Space Nine. I actually put it up there with some of my favorite shows on television. I think rewatching the series, especially as an adult and as someone who's now really heavy in film and TV criticism, it sort of amazes me that it's not talked about more, because it's an incredibly intelligent series and very audacious in ways that I think is more interesting than so-called golden age TV shows we have going on today.
I agree with you. And certainly this is, and people have heard me talk about this so much, but this is, Deep Space Nine was kind of on the cusp of when television seemed to realize, hey, we could tell long story arcs and people will stick with it. They won't be confused. Everything doesn't have to reset after the end of the show, which, you know, led to many of the great shows and led to, you know, Ronald D. Moore going off and doing Battlestar Galactica and really embracing that idea. And I don't know if Deep Space Nine gets enough credit for that.
No, I don't think it does, weirdly.
It is very sad. But luckily, so the universe has smiled upon us because it gave us, randomly, of Deep Space Nine episode from season one. So season one of Deep Space Nine. I love Deep Space Nine, don't get me wrong. Season one of Deep Space Nine, not super great. We got a season one, episode seven, Q-less, which is... Well, we're going to talk about Q as well, obviously. Well, let's talk about Q, because he is, well, he's in the title, because I guess there's some kind of contractual obligation that if Q shows up, you have to have a Q pun in the title. Except for, I think there's one episode of TNG that has Q that doesn't have Q in the title. Now, Q, I think, is a character you either like or hate. I want to know, I think I could guess, based on your reaction, where you fall on that spectrum, but tell me, what are your thoughts on Q?
Hate is a very strong word. I'm not sure I hate Q. I mean, there's moments when he's in Next Generation that him annoying Picard is kind of hilarious. And it's just, he's so ridiculous. But in Deep Space Nine, it's weird for him to appear, even in the first season where they still haven't completely figured themselves out yet. And you can see that they're trying to put the characters in the sort of modes we would expect from Star Trek. But even then, like, he doesn't fit within the fabric of this show at all. And so it's like, it's really strange to see him. And he just gets on my nerves. Just like, at least in this, he's like just so annoying. I was very much, you know, on Cisco's side, and was just like, yeah, punch that out, because he's getting on my nerves.
Yes, and I do. I feel like the writers did a good job of, well, A, I think they're using Q as a crutch because he's a popular character from TNG, first season. Let's have him in here. People will watch Deep Space Nine. So I get that. But I do think it's interesting that, you know, he shows up and he's wearing the TNG uniform that he always wears, which, so he feels like he's out of place already. And then he wants to deal with Sisko as he dealt with Picard, not realizing Sisko is quite different than Captain Picard. And my favorite, possibly my favorite moment in season one entirety, is when Sisko punches Q and Q says, "You hit me. Picard never hit me." And Sisko says, "I am not Picard."
Yeah, and there's something like the look on Sisko's face is just like, holy. I mean, you know, Avery Brooks is an amazing actor. And like, just like, oh God. I mean, actually, I think one of the reasons why Deep Space Nine is probably the best Star Trek ever has been is because of, it's just like a really stacked cast. Like, the cast is amazing. These know how to act. And Avery Brooks has this face he makes occasionally, which it's the same face I make when confronted by white nonsense. It's just like, he's just like, everything's getting on his black ass nerves.
And I feel like, if I could say this, I believe Q may be the personification of white nonsense.
Yeah, I mean, complete white nonsense. Just like, I mean, he thinks he has the privilege and right to kind of just completely mess up people's lives and then just looks at everybody as just, you know, completely beneath him. I don't know. God, I just hate. Ugh. You know what? Maybe I do hate Q.
I was going to say, I think I may have steered you towards hatred of Q. There is a good moment where he's trying to get, I know we're skipping around, but he's talking to Vash and she basically wants him out of her life. And he says, she says, "You think you know everything." And he says, I do know everything. And then she, of course, reacts with, "That's what makes it even worse," because he is insufferable, but he is all-knowing and all-powerful. So it's really annoying.
Yeah, I mean, that is really, really, really annoying.
Because this is what he chooses to do with his powers. He could do anything.
And just like a little... like, if I was all-powerful, I would not... I mean, he's kind of like a child... who gets a new set of toys and mm-hmm. is just like mashing them together, except those toys have a conscience and like are sentient. So it's like weird.
It's very weird.
He's just a weird, like he works sometimes in The Next Generation just because that's such a completely different show. I mean, and the way the cast works is completely different. So sometimes he can work, I mean, sort of. Work within that show.
Well, that's because he's so not like there. He's so strange and alien, yeah. and on TNG. And I was having this conversation with my wife. Is you know, all the characters are in Starfleet for the most part, and so they are all kind of, you know, cut from the same cloth. They're interesting characters. Don't get me wrong, but they're kind of there's a heterogeneousness about them, right? Mm-hmm. And Deep Space Nine, I think, is so much more interesting because the character. Well, I agree with you. The actors are really good. But the characters are so interesting because they're not all Starfleet. So we've got all different kinds of characters with all different kinds of motivations. And so you get, you know, Kira, who is, you know, sometimes just annoyed by Starfleet. You get Odo, who once again, also annoyed by Starfleet. Quark, who is, could be a problematic character, but I still think he's delightful. Garak, who I think may be my favorite Star Trek character, period.
Really? Okay.
I just like him so much. He's just a simple tailor.
Oh, God, he is fabulous. I, like, rewatching the show, I'm like, damn, I need to learn how to insult people like that. He's great. I love it.
And he has that smile.
Yeah, he's, oh, God. Yeah, such a great actor, too. Yeah, it's just like, Q doesn't fit into this sort of dynamic with the cast, even though the show was still definitely finding its footing. Mm-hmm. It just seems like such a weird little detour in season one. Although that moment of, you know, Sisko punching him and I'm not Picard thing is like beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
But everything else about the episode is just like, huh, okay, that was something.
There is another good Q moment, and then I think we should talk about Vash, who is really the main character, I think, of this episode. Because Q is kind of just a little sprinkle here and there. And that is when O'Brien recognizes Q, because he served on the Enterprise, and he's kind of been in the background while, you know, Q has been doing whatever he's been doing to the Enterprise crew. And O'Brien, I think, also through the course of Deep Space Nine, becomes a fantastic character. And so he's like, oh, I need to go tell Sisko that we have a problem. So he does. And then eventually Q is confronted by O'Brien. And O'Brien is like, don't you know who I am? And Q is like, oh, Enterprise, you are one of the little people.
He was. He became amazing on Deep Space Nine. Like, it's crazy how great both him and then with Worf popped up eventually. They mm-hmm. both, like, really deepened his characters. Oh, poor O'Brien.
Poor O'Brien. But yes, I think O'Brien is the most tortured character, perhaps, in Star Trek history. They put him through so much.
Yeah. It's, like, amazing what they just said. It's like, huh, what are we going to do with this episode? I don't know. Let's with O'Brien. And it's just like next level, mm-hmm. you know, like it's really bad sometimes. I'm like, dude, this guy is probably a mess.
What hope? And there's not even a counselor there that he can talk to. So I hope he has Deanna on speed dial because he needs some help.
I mean, they got a sort of counselor, well, you know, last season with what's her
face? Oh, yes. Esri.
Esri. Dex. I hate her so much. And I think she'd be a terrible therapist, counselor, whatever. Ugh. God, I just rewatched the series, like, actually twice, back to back, and I was like, oh, wow, I forgot how great this was. Mm-hmm. And then we get to that last season, and it's like, that's why I always struggle through the last season, because I hate Esri.
Yeah, I question the idea of having, I think they should have just let Dax die, and then that was it. Everybody's sad, and the whole last season could have been, that could have been a motif of the last season, instead of, let's deal with this new perky Dax.
Yeah, it was so weird, because it's like, it's the last season, so it's kind of not a good idea to introduce a new character who's supposed to be that important. Mm-hmm. So the season is so strangely split between, oh, we need to really develop Esri as her own person, and then we also need to kind of deal with everything the last season should deal with. I agree, either Dax should have died completely, or okay, like the symbiote goes into another Trill character or whatever, but she, why would she be on the station? Because isn't the whole point that they like experience new things?
Yeah, they could have had like one episode where Esri is like, I am the new host, I just wanted to say, you know, I will, goodbye, I'll remember you always, and now I'm off to do something.
Yeah, like elsewhere that does not include Bashir. Oh God.
Oh man. Can we talk about Bashir? Because I am
No, I actually like him.
But I like Bashir as he goes on, but first season Bashir is kind of skeezy, I feel like. He's just, and this episode opens with him hitting on this poor woman and telling her the most boring story ever that ends with him not even being the valedictorian but the second runner-up.
Yeah, he's such a you know, it's funny like watching Deep Space Nine with characters like Bashir versus something like Next Generation, which, you know, obviously Earth is now this wonderful place where like sexism and racism and capitalism doesn't exist.
Yep, all solved. But
yeah, which is great, like, been needed to that future. But then, you know, but I'm like, humanity is too complex for it to be a complete wonderland. So it makes sense that a character like Bashir would exist.
Mm-hmm.
And he's such a, he's like a, I like to call him an intergalactic, because that's really what he is. But he actually thinks he's way smoother and more charming than I think he is. He does come across really skeezy in the first season, especially with like, Jadzia and him really wanting to bone her.
Yes. He wants to get with, no, a woman comes, crosses his path, and he immediately thinks, I need to seduce her. which, you know, come on, Bashir. I will say he's a handsome guy, so he has that going for him, but, yeah, I do not approve of his attitudes in this first season. And so he hits on this poor woman who we don't even know who she is. She seems into it, oddly, but I'm imagining this episode was written by a man, so that probably shows us why she's into it. And then Vash comes on, who we will talk about, and he also decides that he should hit on her as well, with less than thrilling results for him. But so let's talk about Vash, because she is the main character of this. She's another TNG kind of holdover.
Mm-hmm.
Known for being Captain Picard's lady friend for a little bit. and in that episode, where, well, she was in a couple episodes, but mm-hmm. I am always remember the Risa episode as a one of the many examples of the fact that Captain Picard does not know how to dress himself if he is not wearing a uniform.
You mean knows how to dress himself wonderfully, because those costumes he's wearing are, like, amazing.
I will agree that they are amazing costumes, but I think to myself whenever I see them, I really don't. This is a surprise to me that this is what Captain Picard chooses to wear.
Because he knows he's fine as hell. He's like, yes, hot as my Earl Grey tea. And I'm like, yes, you are, Picard.
He can get away with it. I will say he can carry these, his blousy blouses and his super tight pants. It looks
super
good on him.
Super tight. Sometimes really short. It's like, oh wow, okay, Picard. Didn't know you rolled like that.
Well, I guess you know, he has to wear a uniform most of the time, and when he's not, he just wants to, you know,
be free.
Be himself. And so he and Vash had a little relationship, which is interesting because Vash is not a very Picardian character.
No.
Which I think probably is the attraction there, right? He is kind of calm, cool, collected, and she is very smart, but perhaps with less scruples than one would imagine Captain Picard would be interested in. But they do share a love of archaeology, so there you go. So she's kind of like a Indiana Jones in space. Only she sells stuff instead of bringing it to the museums. And so she has been in this episode. The conceit of this episode is that a shuttlecraft has come back, or a roundabout has come back, and it's out of energy. And they're trying to, there's for some reason some drama about getting them out of the runabout. But I just thought, why don't they beam them out? But whatever. And she's on there. So Vash is on there, and here she is. She's got a bunch of purloined stuff. But how did she get in the Gamma Quadrant? That's what everybody wants to know. And it's Q. We already talked about Q. He's boring. But let's talk about Vash. What do you think of Vash? Because she's basically the main character of this episode.
I don't care. That's the best way I can describe how I feel about her. At least in this episode. Like, I don't know. She's sort of a strange character to me. So like, on paper, I can see myself liking her, especially how you put it, that she's like a female Indiana Jones in space, but she's like actually not a good guy. Something about the tenor of her character and the fact that like the heart of her character is like who she's or has.
Yeah.
Makes it kind of boring. I think if there was like no, you know, if there was no weird romantic thing going on, then I think the character would be way more interesting. But as it stands, it's just sort of like, okay, so we're going to give you like this badass woman who just happens to have some weird relationships with dudes.
That is a problematic aspect of her, because she is in TNG. She hooks her star to Picard. We all understand why. He's wearing tight pants and a blouse. It makes sense. But then, you know, along comes Q, and she's like, well, I'm gonna get with this guy. And we all know he's super annoying, although all powerful, though. And I have on many occasions noticed that power is quite attractive to people. So it helps you overlook many flaws about people if you have a lot of power. And there are many examples that we could talk about, but we don't need to. And then now she basically, to get out of her issues in this episode, she doesn't really seduce Bashir, but she plays along with him for no particular reason, because he's not going to do anything for her. She certainly seduces Quark, although it's not very hard.
No, it's not.
He is an easy mark, that Quark.
Yeah, he is.
And he, you know, it's interesting because he also is, he wants the umlauts, but he also wants 20% of her auction that she, or 50%, whatever they end up settling on, because she has all these artifacts that one imagines she's stolen, and that she's going to sell them all to the highest bidder. And if you're going to do that in Deep Space Nine, the person who is at the perfect fence is Quark. And so he has a very small part in this, but the one person she doesn't really try to seduce is Sisko.
She knows he don't want her.
I think that's true. And he's mostly annoyed because Quark is messing up stuff. And also, the power is flickering and the gravitronic anomalies are happening. And we don't know why.
Although, such a dumb episode.
It is, especially since you know exactly why, because they show Vash has this, I don't even know how to describe it, this like round globe with swirly things in it that she's brought. And that is clear. The moment you see that, you think, that is what's causing all these problems.
Science.
And that reminds me of another good thing that I liked that Q says, because you know, they're trying to figure out what's causing this, anomalies, and he won't tell them because he's Q. But he says something about how Jean-Luc and the Enterprise crew would have had you know, all this science-y technobabble figured out hours ago. Which I liked, because that's basically Star Trek.
Yeah, I mean, that's accurate. But, you know, the people on Deep Space Nine, they're dealing with a lot of other shit, okay? They have a lot going on.
Deep Space Nine is not a cushy assignment. I feel like the Enterprise is a pretty sweet assignment. You're on the most advanced starship in the fleet. You're going doing cool stuff. You got Captain Picard. You know, you're probably going to do a lot of diplomatic missions, so there's not a lot of danger. Although every episode you are in peril. But Deep Space Nine, like, you're on a Cardassian space station. Mm-hmm. Nothing's working. The Bajorans are mildly unhappy. And kind of boring. I'm not a fan of Bajorans. So.
Really? Whoa! I actually love Bajorans.
Do you? I always, I like the idea of Bajorans.
Or maybe it's just Kira.
I love Kira, I will say. I love individual Bajorans, but the thing that I find annoying about them is whenever there's an episode of Deep Space Nine that focuses on the Bajoran religion, and I'm like, this is not my cup of tea. Although I do like the fact that Deep Space Nine is one of the only, perhaps the only, Star Trek series that even broaches the subject of kind of organized religion in any way.
I actually think, like, Deep Space Nine has one of the most fascinating depictions of faith and, like, religion. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I find it really, really fascinating. But I'm a lapsed Catholic, so maybe there's something about it.
I'm also a lapsed Catholic. And that's why I like Sisko, though, right? Because he's caught between these two worlds, because he's the prophet. He didn't want to be the prophet. He thinks they're wormhole aliens for the most part. He's a man of science. But he also deeply respects the Bajoran faith. And he often says that he wants to retire on Bajor because he likes it so much.
Oh, cute.
Yes. So I like that. I like the trappings around it. But then when there's an episode that just deals with, like, some Kai doing something, I'm like, I don't know.
They're always doing something.
They're up to hijinks.
Those trifling. I don't know. I really actually find the Bajorans really interesting. I really, really like them. I don't know. I like a lot of the aliens that Deep Space Nine took a bit more time to develop.
Mm-hmm. Well, I love the Cardassians as well. I think they are fascinating. Especially Gul Dukat. I mean, come on.
Oh, God. What an amazing villain. Oof.
He's very good. He's not in this episode. I would have been interested. It would be interesting to see Gul Dukat and Q talking to one another.
Good luck to Q. I feel like if, like, somehow he would find a way to completely destroy Q, all powerful or not.
I think he would end up somehow at the end of the episode, Gul Dukat would somehow end up with all of Q's powers. Which would probably not be good for anybody, because Q is bad, but Gul Dukat with Q's powers is far worse.
Oh, definitely.
But Gul Dukat is not in this episode. Q is. I know. Who else can we talk? Let's talk about Dax. She doesn't do much in this episode, sadly.
No, but she's also just really weird in the first season. Like, you could tell they didn't know how to develop her yet. She's not quite, but almost Spock-like.
Yes.
You know, like, so it's really just weird, and thankfully they moved away from that after.
Yeah, and she starts to have emotions, and I really like the interplay between her and Sisko, because she's one of her incarnations is his mentor, basically, so they have this very interesting relationship. But yeah, in this episode, she runs some scans, she gets saved from the shuttle, the runabout, and then it
looks
ends.
Pretty.
She does look pretty. She's a very attractive woman. And then at the end, it ends with her just kind of looking at somebody and not saying anything, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, it's a strange episode.
Oh, and I forgot. So the strangest thing is the thing that the jewel, we all think it's a jewel, that's causing all these problems, is it turns out it's an egg.
It's like it really comes across like they lost the original script and they're like... We have to get these actors something to do. And they're like, okay, we need a glowy thing.
They had a Star Trek episode checklist. They're like, yes, glowing thing, Q, another character that we recognize, runabouts in peril, power fluctuations. We got it all. Now, according to Memory Alpha, which is the wiki that has many details about every Star Trek episode ever made, and is a fantastic resource. This episode was written originally, and it did not have Q in it. It was just Vash showing up.
And I can tell you that.
And then they said, this thing, we like it, but it needs a lot more Q. And so they put in Q. Which, I don't know. I mean, this episode is just a hodgepodge of stuff that it doesn't really make any sense. It doesn't move anything forward. It doesn't tell us anything. This is, of course, pre-goatee Sisko, who is slightly less interesting than goateed Sisko.
Yes, you can, as his style slightly changes, like once he has a shaved head and the goatee, then that he is just so amazing.
Yes, that's the Sisko you want. You want bald head, goatee Sisko. That is the one you need. Yeah. I think it's weird that, and this is just, I really love Deep Space Nine, so anyone listening might think that I am being hard on Deep Space Nine. I'm being hard on season one of Deep Space Nine. Mm-hmm. I also think, really, he should have been a captain in the first season of Deep Space Nine. Come on. He's in charge of this space station. Make him a captain.
Yeah, like, I don't know. I'm always cracked. I kind of like that he isn't at first, and so we see him eventually, like, you know, he gets there. Mm-hmm. But I was like, of course a black man is this ass assignment.
It's true.
And he ain't even a captain yet. It takes him a hot ass minute. What is, like, season three, is it?
I think so, yep. He finally becomes a captain.
Yeah, which is, like, actually sort of longer than you'd expect.
And longer than it should have been. Frankly, I still think he should have been a captain at the very beginning, but I can see the argument that you want to see his character arc and he grows as a character and then he's a captain. That makes it interesting, I guess. But I still think he should have been a captain right from the start. But he was not, so I cannot change that. Anything else interesting that you want to talk about that happened in this episode? I'm trying to think about what has happened. They get rid of Bashir very quickly. Q makes him go to sleep, so we don't see him anymore.
It's so weird. But I'm actually on Memory Alpha, and this is like a weird tidbit, and I'm a Chicagoan, so I'm going to highlight this. But apparently Quark's line, bid high and bid often, is a reference to a quote attributed to the late Richard J. Daley, who was our very, very, very long-running mayor. That is weird. Sorry. I just had to – I'm like, what?
Oh, okay. Is that the vote early, vote often?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, okay, sure.
Well, let's talk about Quark. He's not – I mean, he is a little – there's a dash of Quark in here. He is kind of more of a plot device, really, that, you know, delivers Vash to this auction so she can auction off her wares. But he does grow and become a much bigger character as the seasons go. What do you think about him?
With Quark, you know, I think they had a handle on him earlier on than probably any of the other characters. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's not like he becomes dramatically different the way Jadzia, in my opinion, like,
right,
really becomes very different once they figure out what to do with her. But with him, it's like, you know, his, you know, nature stays the same. You just get a bit more layers to it. I actually love Quark and think he's hilarious.
because he is.
And he's also, I don't know, his dynamic with Odo is really fascinating. He's just like, you know, I don't know, when I first, on my first rewatch of Deep Space Nine earlier this year, I wasn't a huge fan of Quark, but then, like, rewatching it again, I don't know, I really fell in love with his character.
I feel like Quark is, he is under many, many layers of cowardice, selfishness, and greed. He is a good person. But it takes a lot to get to that center of good.
Yeah, a lot.
A lot. I mean,
a lot. But I mean, and I, like, some of my favorite episodes in terms of, you know, the more comedic ones are Quark-centered. Mm-hmm. Like that one where he becomes a woman. Oh, what the hell?
Oh, Quark. And I do like Rom, who his hapless brother. Yeah. Oh, poor Rom. Yeah. And of course, Nog is good too. And wait, Jake is not in this at all.
No, he's not.
Season one, Jake, not my favorite. Although I do like Jake as he grows older.
I do too. I actually feel like he's one of the only characters that have appeared in Star Trek that I don't want to kill.
That's true. I just find him in the first season mildly annoying, but he's no Wesley Crusher.
Wesley Crusher is terrible. What the? Oh my God. How is that actor who? What's that motherfucker?
Will Wheaton.
Mm-hmm. How did he become a geek? Because Wesley Crusher is terrible. And not even it's a teenager and they're acting like a teenager and they're annoying, because that's what you would expect.
Mm-hmm.
When teenage characters are mildly annoying, the way Jake is in the first season,
yep.
It doesn't bother me too much because I'm they're a kid, whatever. But Wesley Crusher, child genius on the bridge, talking back to his mom, shut up, Wesley. Jeez. Go die.
And he doesn't die. He leaves the ship, but he becomes a traveler. It's the same difference. And I think the thing that, I love Beverly Crusher. I think she's a great character.
I love her, too.
But they really didn't do anything with the relationship with Wesley Crusher and Beverly Crusher.
Which is so weird. It's so weird to me, because I'm wait a minute. Why wouldn't you do something with that? Also, I do not believe that she would give birth to such an annoying child. who was her husband? We know who her husband was. But I feel if we actually, got more flashbacks of the husband, we'd realize, oh, so that's where Wesley gets it. He's an annoying...
That's her type. The reason I like Jake more is because I really think that they did a really great job of the relationship between Jake and Sisko. And
it's beautiful.
It's fantastic. And that episode where... I forget the name of it. The Visitor, maybe, where we see the Jake adult, and then he, his father comes back. It's such a great episode.
Played by Tony Todd, who's such an amazing actor.
Mm-hmm. Man, Deep Space Nine is the best. I can't believe that.
It's such an amazing series. Not just narratively, but even in how it, obviously TV's become more interested in visual storytelling currently, and it is more visually audacious. And yes, the camera work on Star Trek Deep Space Nine is very static compared to, I guess, what we watch today. But I actually think they do some inventive things directing-wise, because, good directing isn't only about, I just put in a tracking shot because, I don't know. Male directors love a good tracking shot. It's like a measuring contest, I think.
Well, you have to know, if you have the most track, you win, right?
Yeah, that's what it correlates to the length of your something. I have no idea. But, I think, especially episodes directed by Avery Brooks, who played Sisko, there's really just really, really, really smart framing. The show has really smart framing in how it kind of sets up its world, so to speak. It doesn't have visual splendor the way something insert whatever Golden Age show people like.
It does, though. It looks so different than the other Star Trek series, too.
It does.
That I think that it's dark. It feels a little kind of run down. Even when they get the Defiant, which is a new shiny ship, it's still dark in there because it's a warship.
Yeah, and it's small.
Mm-hmm. And Worf is on there. He's angry.
Yeah, Worf. I love Worf so much. That's all I have to say.
Well,
I love him.
Who doesn't love Worf? Worf is great. I think that Deep Space Nine Worf is fantastic. TNG Worf was mostly just kind of there as a butt of a joke for most of the time. And we still get that with Deep Space Nine Worf, because Worf is a very dour kind of guy. But he also, his relationship with Dax, so great.
Oh, it's such a great relationship. I love it. Oh my God. They're one of my favorite pop culture relationships. That's why when Esri came, I was like, you gotta be kidding me.
That's right. No, thumbs down. We agree.
Boo. Boo, Esri. And really, a fear of Texas.
Yeah, sure. You could do better. I don't even like you, Esri, but you could do better than Bashir.
Seriously.
So if you had to, now I'm going to ask you a difficult question. If you had to pick, and it may not be a difficult question, if you had to pick your favorite character from Deep Space Nine, who would you pick?
This probably changes depending on the day.
Mm.
But I'm going to go with Odo.
Oh, and so Odo we did not really talk about.
Love Odo. I like to think of myself as like the love child, if they could have had a child, between Odo and Kira Nerys.
That's another, we keep talking about relationships from Deep Space Nine, but that is another fantastic relationship.
I know some people really don't like it, but I love the episode when they finally kiss, and like, it's so, I love it so much. Sometimes I just rewatch it to put a smile on my face. Like, I love, I mean, first of all, you know, what is the actor's name? Because it's escaping me. But the actor who plays Odo is amazing. He's just simply a great actor.
Renee something.
Yeah, and I'm not going to butcher his last name. Sorry, bro. But, the acting is really, really amazing. And just his storyline is really fascinating about, you know, I don't know. I just really connect to it as someone who has a very tricky relationship with my blood family. So, mm-hmm. You know, Odo is such a weird and fascinating character. I really love Odo. He's so weird and doesn't handle emotion well. Mm-hmm. And I don't know.
He's that kind of classic fish out of water character, but with many more layers too, because he could, you know, if he chose to, he could look just like a Bajoran if he wants, but he's not going to do that because he's not a Bajoran. Although he does ape the researcher who spent many years experimenting on him, because he's a complicated character. And he has a very clear code of honor that he follows. He doesn't brook nonsense, which what also makes his relationship with Quark so fascinating.
He has, I think, some of the most interesting dynamics with other members of the cast.
Mm-hmm.
And then also he's kind of a pivotal part of my favorite top five DS9 episodes, which is Children of Time, which is such a weird episode. Like his love story with it's just beautiful. I don't know. I love me some Odo.
Odo is
Q. God, why do we have to focus on Q in this stupid Q episode?
I know he does, and Odo does nothing except look at some strange aliens as they come in and I think wag his finger at Quark probably.
But that's probably
about it. I think Odo is one of these great characters that you put him with other characters that perhaps you'd like less or could be perhaps grating. He's kind of a governor on that, and I'm mm-hmm. thinking, of course, specifically of Lwaxana Troi, who I like in small doses. His interaction with her is really very nice, I think.
Yeah, rather touching, yes. Surprisingly.
Exactly. You wouldn't think, because when you see her, you think, oh, Lwaxana Troi.
So it's like, run, Odo, exactly. What are you doing?
That's what Picard would do. He would run away.
Literally has run away from that woman.
That's right.
I would too.
She's a bit much, and she can read your thoughts, so it's tough.
Yeah, nice.
People sometimes, Rite of Trek listeners know this, that we spend a lot of time talking about Star Trek, but not talking about the episode in particular, because this episode is kind of a mishmash, and it's not an interesting mishmash when you get to it. But it's fun to visit our friends and see them as kind of Deep Space Nine babies and trying to figure out who they're going to be.
Yeah, Deep Space Nine babies.
Okay. That's right. And that's a show I would watch. Star Trek producers, if you're listening, Deep Space Nine babies. I would actually like a prequel set on the Cardassian Deep Space Nine, Tarek Nor, when Gul Dukat is, and that could be like on, that could be an HBO show because he's doing all kinds of horrible things. Come on.
That's a great idea.
See?
But that's not going to probably
happen. No, it's not. So your final thoughts on this episode of Q-less Deep Space Nine?
Trash.
Well, succinct. I like it. I agree. not so great. You could probably skip this episode. I probably should have said that at the beginning of the podcast, but because it doesn't do anything. It's not like anyone grows or learns anything.
There's a few like season one episodes that I think are very much worth it because they kind of introduce ideas that become more important as the series goes on, or you know, for something like that, or they have a good character moment. This episode doesn't really, it doesn't offer much.
No, there's nothing, there are no, because it has enough cue that none of the characters get to shine. And so there, it's, you know, we don't learn anything, nobody grows, just skip it. But thank you so much for joining me and talking about this episode.
Oh, of course. It was fun to talk about.